Welcome to Your Space Journey, where we venture into the future of space exploration and the incredible leaders who are taking us there. Here's your host, Chuck Fields.
Hello, thanks for joining us today for Your Space Journey. We have an exciting episode today. We'll be speaking with Peter Beck, the founder and chief executive of Rocket Lab. But before we speak with Peter, we want to do our special segment about Your Space Journey. This is where we share segments from our audience where they describe what drew them to the passion for space and what they're most excited about for the future of space exploration. And it's my privilege to introduce my friend, Philip Shane, from What the If. I was fortunate to meet Philip earlier this year at a NASA social. Here's him telling his story for what drew him into space.
Your Space Journey.
Hi, I'm Philip Shane. I host a science and space podcast called What the If. And I do that because I grew up watching Carl Sagan. And I pursued science and even I interned at NASA for a number of years when I was much younger. And inside wasn't my thing. I realized what I really wanted to do was share the stories of the people who do it to the world that has never heard of them and should appreciate it. And there's a whole lot of people that don't appreciate even the fact that space is there. It's above everybody's head. Just look up. And I think they're afraid to. So I grew up just with a serious passion for that through the Apollo missions, the space shuttle, all these things. And then I got invited to a NASA social event just recently. It was the SpaceX Crew Dragon launch. It was the first time I ever attended a rocket launch in person at NASA. And the thunderous roar at night and the blinding light and orange and red and white smoke billowing out from the rocket as it took off right in front of us into a sky full of stars. It was the most science fiction thing I've ever experienced. And I always knew this, but it just fully, even more magnified that sense of excitement, joy, passion, thrill, just giddiness, frankly, for an appreciation for living at this time, being able to share what the people at NASA do in particular. And so we live in a golden age of space travel, and that's an amazing thing.
Thanks so much, Philip, for sharing your story. I'll look forward to seeing you again in an upcoming launch. But now, on to our featured guest. It is my privilege to introduce Peter Beck. Again, Peter is the founder and chief executive for Rocket Lab. Since founding Rocket Lab in 2006, Peter has grown the company to become a globally recognized industry leader in space and a billion-dollar company employing world-class engineers and technicians. Peter established Rocket Lab's Electron Orbital Launch Program in 2013. He also oversaw the development of the world's first and only private orbital launch range, located in New Zealand. Peter played a crucial role in establishing international treaties and legislation to enable orbital launch capability from New Zealand. That capability was realized in January 2018 with Rocket Lab's first orbital launch of the Electron rocket. I wanted to kind of go back a little bit. You just launched, as of the time of this, As the Crow Flies, and I believe that was your ninth Electron flight, and so far you've gotten 40 satellites launched so far. I just want to say congratulations on this tremendous success.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, you've done a wonderful job, and one of the things that we love to ask is we love to find out sort of where the passion came from for space. And I understand that as a teenager, you sort of developed an interest in powerful engines and you wanted to build rockets growing up. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that passion began?
Yeah. I mean, for as long as I can remember, I was always fascinated by space. You know, I would go out and look at the night sky and just sit there in awe and wonder. You know, to boot, I loved engineering. So it was kind of the perfect marriage of two passions, really. And, you know, I loved the challenge of building rocket engines. And, you know, there's something about, you know, just harnessing that enormous energy and controlling it and using it to achieve, you know, really cool things. It's just really, really exciting.
Well, I even heard that your high school counselor actually requested a meeting with your parents because they were concerned that your dream was of launching rockets, building rockets, was absurdly unachievable. Is that true?
Correct. No, that's absolutely correct. Yeah. There's a local aluminium smelter that was down the road, and I was very good with my hands. And so, you know, the normal kind of trajectory would have been to go to that aluminium smelter and be a tradesman, which you know would have been a fine career, but just not something that I'm interested in doing.
There's obviously a lot of young adults out there, and they have these dreams that some would consider crazy. What advice would you give to someone for not holding back, for going for their dream? What advice would you give?
Oh, I think that's an absolute must. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, the worst that can happen is you go and get a real job. So I think, you know, it's the bigger the dream, the better as well. I would just encourage anybody out there, if they've got a true passion and something that they think they can pull off, then just go for it. And there'll be plenty of people along the way that won't think the same way that you do. But at the end of the day, what have you got to lose? You got a very short time on this planet. Let's make it count.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Now let's talk Rocket Lab. You founded it in 2006. By the end of 2009, it became the first private company in the Southern Hemisphere to reach space. Now, some of our audience might not be familiar with Rocket Lab, and I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what sets it apart from some of the others.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess we were probably one of the early movers on, seeing that satellites were obviously going to shrink, and with a shrinking satellite, there would be a requirement for a launch vehicle that would be able to service and deploy those satellites. So we officially started the Electron program in 2014, and started raising capital out of Silicon Valley and various institutions to develop the Electron launch vehicle. And it's a small launch vehicle that's designed to lift small payloads into orbit, but really frequently to a number of trajectories and inclinations and altans, and really kind of open up space for the small satellite, who are typically, historically at least, been kind of second-class citizens on very large launch vehicles, ride-sharing at the time or the pace or the orbit that the main spacecraft wants to go to. So think of us as like, I really don't like using the same, but think of us like as the Uber of space. So you have a very large bus, and that's fine if you want to jump on with a whole lot of folks and go somewhere. But if you just want to pick up your phone and get picked up at your door and dropped off at your door and in comfort, then that's really where we excel.
That is a great analogy too. I love that. And one thing I also love too is just the mission names themselves. As the crow flies, look, Ma, no hands. My wife is in QA, so we loved It's a Test, Still Testing.
Yeah,
it's business time. What led you and your team to develop such creative names for your missions? I love it.
Well, I mean, look, this is an incredibly serious business where there's just no room for any error. So this is about the one thing that you can actually just have a bit of fun with. And it kind of reflects the nature of the team here is we work incredibly hard, but also we like to have a little bit of fun now and again. And really that was kind of, how we were going to express ourselves through the naming conventions.
And you mentioned Electron, of course. Now, I understand it's all carbon composite. The Rutherford engine, if I understand right, is actually 3D printed.
Correct.
About 24 hours per engine.
Correct.
You have revolutionized 3D printing. Can you tell us a bit more about that process and what led you to do this?
Yeah, so for us, it's all about manufacturability. So we created a number of new technologies, not because we wanted to do something different. We really looked for ways that we could solve big historical problems. As you pointed out, it's an all-carbon composite vehicle. We did that simply because we're able to produce the tanks and the structures at a cost, efficiency, and scale using those techniques that we couldn't with aluminum. And then, the Rutherford engine, when we first announced the Rutherford engine, it was all 3D printed, electric turbo pumped. And, I think there was a lot of people in the industry kind of looked at us sideways because that was at a time where, that wasn't a very common thing to do. So, you know, we've put over 90 of those engines into space now, and you know, everybody 3D prints some or most of their rocket engine these days. You know, the technology, you know, we really pushed the boundaries at the time, and we did that because you know, there was no other way that we could produce engines at the quality, the performance, and the flight rate, other than this you know, additive manufacturing techniques.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the kick stage? What I understand, and I'm sure you can put this in a lot better wording than I can, is that the kick stage helps achieve that exact orbital trajectory that they need, even more circular than elliptical. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, so the kick stage does a number of things. So firstly, think of it as it's a very capable third stage. It has its own propulsion system, its own communication system, you know, its own guidance system, and you're exactly right. It enables us to insert to orbital accuracies which are almost unheard of within the industry. You know, some kilometers or sub-kilometers of accuracy. And you know, the propulsion system is, you know, perfectly sized for those really, really accurate orbital insertions. But moreover, you know, we have a very strong commitment to the sustainable use of space. And for us, we weren't really comfortable with leaving large portions of our launch vehicle on orbit. So the typical way you go to orbit is, you know, you go into a transfer orbit with your second stage, then you relight your second stage and you put your whole second stage into orbit and then deploy your spacecraft. And, you know, orbital lifetime is a function of, you know, mass, drag and altitude. So if you can remove some of those things, then you can shorten your orbital life. So what we do is we leave our second stage in an elliptical orbit, so we don't actually circularize with that second stage. Because we leave it in an elliptical orbit, you know, it deorbits in, you know, sometimes a matter of weeks, and we don't leave anything behind. And then the kick stage, as you correctly point out, circularizes the orbit, deploys the payload, and then because it's got its own propulsion system, we can deorbit that as well and leave nothing behind except the spacecraft. And, you know, for a company that kind of claims that they want to, you know, launch a lot of, you know, spacecraft, that seemed to us the only responsible thing to do.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And what I understand is sort of an evolution of the kick stage is where Photon, satellite platform comes along. And you had some news recently where I believe you have an extended range now, which includes the lunar vicinity. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that announcement.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it always used to frustrate me that you know, I had a launch vehicle that had basically the same equipment as the satellite that I was flying, and my launch vehicle became a satellite for a number of hours while I was deploying my customer's payload. And it just seems such an incredible waste. Why could we not turn that into a spacecraft in its own right, and then allow people just to focus on building the sensor, building the payload, rather than actually having to build their own spacecraft? So that bore the evolution of the Photon spacecraft bus. And, you know, as we've continued to evolve that spacecraft bus, we've kind of realized some of its capability. And, you know, with some small modifications, we can really, you know, do some incredible missions with that. And, as you say, including deliver small payloads to lunar orbit.
One other thing that I was really impressed about this year, Peter, is you gave a presentation that talked about just how, as an engineer, you spoke of this in Photon, you don't want to throw away anything, and you're moving towards plans for reusing electrons.
Correct.
In the first stage. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that reusability plan.
Yeah, so actually Flight 10, which is on the pad now, is a really big milestone for us. So Flight 10 is a block upgrade. It has a full guidance suite on board, telemetry suite. It also has reaction control system on board, so little rocket engines that will orientate the stage for re-entry. And this is really our first you know, foray into you know, re-entry deep into the Earth's atmosphere. So we'll learn a lot from this mission, and we'll learn how close we are, how far away we are. But basically, everything's on this stage except for the aerodynamic decelerators. So we won't be trying to put it under a parachute. We won't be trying to capture it. We'll just be pushing it deep and fast into the atmosphere to gain as much knowledge as we can about the environment to feed back into our models.
You know, that's one thing I think you explained really well, too, is because of the size of your spacecraft, it's not even it doesn't make sense. It's not physically, I don't know if it's possible to return to the launch pad using all that fuel. So by capturing in midair, which I think is brilliant, I think that's just a wonderful idea to make the reusability rockets.
Yeah, we were tasked with a very difficult approach here, and for a long time I believed that it was not possible to recover a small launch vehicle, because the environment that you have to push through, you know, we've got to go from 8.5 times the speed of sound to, you know, 0.01 times the speed of sound in around about 70 seconds, so that's a tough thing to do. And so for a long time, we didn't believe that was achievable. But as we started to fly and capture data, we learned more and more, and got ourselves, you know, comfortable, along with developing new technologies that we believe, you know, are gonna provide that solution. But yes, I mean, it is quite a different approach. If we were to use propulsive landing that others have demonstrated, we would take a small launch vehicle and turn it into a medium sized launch vehicle. And we're not in the business of building medium sized launch vehicles. So it was, you know, some things scale well and some things don't. And that was just one thing that didn't scale well.
Well, that just makes so much sense, and I cannot wait to see as that happens in the future. It's going to be incredible. Now, Rocket Lab is just doing some incredible growth, and one of the things that you're doing now, I believe, is you're building your second launch complex on Wallops Island. I was wondering, how is that going? Can you tell us more about that?
Well, look, this is, I think, words fail me for how impressed I am at the team, both the Rocket Lab team, the Mars team, the Virginia team, at how quickly that launch site has come together. So, you know, we started driving piles in February, and it's going to be activated and certified for flight in December. And there's a lot of concrete and a lot of infrastructure that had to be built there. So I think we redefined how quickly you can build a launch site. Certainly know that that all the team there in Virginia have never seen something built so quickly. But you know, it's a real testament to a great collaboration that we're able to push that out of the ground that fast.
Well, that's incredible. I've heard you say just how immense of a project that was, building a launch. It's no easy feat.
It is really not. It is, yeah. I think people underestimate the ground infrastructure on launch a lot. It's like building a mini city in some respects. It's just crazy.
Now, Peter, we're so excited for you on that. Given just space in general and how it's going, where do you see, I guess, the future of space exploration going? Where would you like to see it, say, 5 years down the road, looking back, what does Rocket Lab look like?
Yeah, I think the definition of success for us will be that we're flying incredibly frequently. Photon is a platform that is just a very prolific platform that enables, you know, a much lower barrier to entry to the market. So someone with a concept or an idea can just get on orbit and provide a service. I think if we can get to that point, then the world becomes a very different place. I think, you know, if space is truly opened up for you know, commercial influence and government, you know, needs, then I think everybody's life down on this planet's gonna look vastly different.
That's wonderful. Well, Peter, again, congratulations to you and your team. We're just so excited about the future for Rocket Lab. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for your support.
Your space journey.
Wow, I really enjoyed my conversation with Peter today. Hope you did too. If you'd like to learn more about Rocket Lab, just go to their website at rocketlabusa.com. I want to thank Peter for joining us today. Also want to thank Philip Shane for sharing his space story earlier in the episode. If you'd like to share your space story with us, less than 2 minutes, please, we would love it if you'd leave us a voicemail at 317-862-4700 or email us your audio or video clip at info@yourspacejourney.com. You can also help us by sharing this episode with a friend or rating us on your favorite podcast application, such as Apple Podcasts, or if you're watching on YouTube, just give us a like and comment there too. We'd appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule for joining us today. We'll see you next time. God bless.